again, Peter Davenport and, of course, Dr. Michael Tanner. That stopped me cold, Doctor, when you said you talked to witnesses who saw windows and beings behind the windows. Was there any description of them? I mean, how much detail was there?
Well, they weren't quite low enough to determine what kind of beings, but they were at least humanoid from the descriptions that we got.
Wow.
But let me back up rise above, so to say, and look at the bigger picture that began to emerge. I believe if you look at all the data we've collected, and believe me, there's still a whole lot more yet to be discovered, probably thousands of people that have information that haven't stepped forward or reported in any other way. Mm-hmm. This appeared to be a very purposeful, even elegant operation that was twofold. It was clearly a demonstration of sorts to the government through the military of a technology that's so far beyond anything we're capable, and I include anything the black operation, so to say, or Groom Lake or anywhere else under a human operation. So it was not had nothing to do with any kind of military opposition or that sort of thing at all.
Would you agree with that, Peter, that what we had in Phoenix was a demonstration? That's an interesting word.
Yeah. I have considered that in years past. It's clear to me that the objects that went over Phoenix were not of man's manufacture. I feel very comfortable in going that far. Mm-hmm. Whether it was a purposeful demonstration or not, in order to answer that, having been born in Missouri, I'd want to talk to the occupants of those craft. Fortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to do that.
Uh-huh. Well,
let me cite some examples here.
Please.
And let me, before I go on, the other aspect of the twofold purpose was this was also simultaneously a sort of parade for the citizens. But the demonstration aspect began to be very clear to me as we saw a number of instances of jets coming out of Luke Air Force Base primarily to intercept these craft.
Uh-huh.
First off, we look at the orbs that came into the state from the direction of Henderson, and as Peter began to get reports from Kingman and Paulden just moving down the state, we have a formation of orbs that were described by Prescott witnesses like giant fireflies. They had an organic aspect to them. They were blue-white as they entered that area. As they left the Prescott area, they changed to a shade of yellow. By the time they got to the edge of Phoenix, they were amber, and they're in fact videotaped going across the valley at some distance by a retired military Air Force man who said they were like nothing he'd ever seen before.
All right, may I just interrupt briefly to ask Peter, can you confirm that chase aircraft were sent up? Because I'm wondering why the military would send chase planes up after their own flares.
Yeah, isn't that an interesting aspect of all of this?
And well, yeah.
I've, on Coast to Coast in years past, Art played that tape of my conversation with the U.S. Air Force airman who called the National UFO Reporting Center about 8 hours after the Phoenix Lights event began. And it's clear that the Air Force was thrown into a tizzy over all of this.
Over their own flares.
Over their... Yeah, they knew that whatever it was that was happening was not of their making, and it was foreign to their operation.
Uh-huh.
Well, all right. As we proceed, the orbs went to, by the time they were halfway between Phoenix and Tucson, they changed to a shade of red, and just short of Tucson, they split up and went in different directions. Meanwhile, and I believe from the information so far that the F-15s that Peter refers to as the ground crewmen talked about probably intercepted or attempted to intercept the orb formation. There are several sets of witnesses that emerged to back up a neighbor to the Luke Air Force Base that said there were 6 to 8 sorties or flights of jets that went out on that date and that night primarily. We have Bill Greiner, the truck driver, who emerged early on, who paced a pair of orbs that, as they drew closer to Luke Air Force Base and then hovered, one of them virtually over the base was like a hot air balloon in shape, without the basket, as he described it, and his two jets, then a third one coming behind it, did a steep bank and arc directly toward this object. It shot straight up and disappeared. Another set of witnesses described a giant triangle that hovered over the Deer Valley Airport area, which is North Phoenix, and they witnessed two jets coming from the direction of Luke attempting to intercept this craft, and instead of disappearing or moving as the others did, it held its ground, and the jets had to veer away to avoid a collision.
Oh, my God. Peter, is there any way of trailing a paperwork? I mean, when they start scrambling planes like that, it's costly. There ought to be a Freedom of Information Act request or something that could confirm they scrambled.
Well, I think Michael is probably the one to answer that. He was much closer to the investigation. It is clear to me that he knows much more about the specifics.
All right, Michael.
Of what was going on that night.
Well, in the word of one officer that spoke obviously off the record, he said that was the worst night of his military life. He said it was sheer pandemonium at Luke Air Force Base. And with the events that actually started for the military about 5:30 in the afternoon, and later that night, two other sets of witnesses saw craft being intercepted by jets. Not only do we have these witnesses confirming the military action, we have also over Crown King in the mountains just north of Phoenix a demonstration of what appears to be some kind of interdimensional capability.
Is there any indication we fired on these craft?
No. By all accounts, it was as if there was a war games going on with no shots fired. It was as if there was cooperation on both sides, but if we can believe the ground crewmen, there certainly was not cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
So much from the military side is that they were just withheld from really doing anything. There was no reason to fire, but only to intercept and investigate. But as the Crown King event was affirmed by an early event over Lake Mead in the, earlier in that day, and 2 weeks later near the Kennedy Airport, these craft went into a really strange routine of rolling and tumbling and going into a ball and disappearing after over Crown King, three of these giant Carpenter squares to describe, to give the description, one witness in central Phoenix of the shape of these craft. A fourth object appeared next to them as they were hovering, as first a bright amber light that morphed, if you will, into a triangle or a square.
Mm-hmm.
Witnesses couldn't quite tell if they're three corners or four. But as the four objects were observed, then going into vertical formation, they begin to compress upon each other, rolling into a ball, as they describe, disappeared within a second or two. Two jets were seen coming from the south to apparently try to intercept something that was not there any longer. The Lake Mead event involved eight of these objects in formation that went into a similar routine when apparently a commercial airliner got close enough to prompt it. And the Kennedy Airport area incident involved two craft that merged and became one, which speaks to witnesses describing the Phoenix Lights event and area of a triangle going away in the direction of Tucson, splitting into two craft. And then we have halfway between Phoenix and Tucson at an area called Picacho Peak, two craft coming together as if there were 747s about to collide, and they merge and become one.
Wow.
So,
boy, looking back on this now and hearing what you're saying, having interviewed all those witnesses, is just mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. And it seems like all of this ought to be put together somehow in one large documentary and simply presented to the American people as a major incident over a major American city.
Well, Jim and I have been working on this, the rest of the story, if you will. Dr. Kitai has done a wonderful job of focusing on the orbs and presenting a great deal of evidence for their existence and their reality. We have spent a lot of time trying to make sense of the rest of the story, and just to do an animation of the nature that is required, it's going to take a feature film budget to do it properly, but in any event, we're dedicated to that purpose, and hopefully by the 10th anniversary, we'll have something to share of a highly compelling nature.
All right, Doctor, I cannot thank you enough for being here tonight. You have really, really added to the whole picture of the Phoenix Lights, a lot of things that nobody simply has heard before. So thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And good night. That's Dr. Michael Tanner. And Peter, I've got a whole lot of questions for you, if you wouldn't mind.
Absolutely.
All right, this is going to take us off track, but I'm getting a lot of email about this, and I want to give you a chance to answer it, all right? A little controversy never hurt us. This comes from Mike in Auburn, Washington. What I want to write to you about tonight, this was an email, are my suspicions about your guest, Peter Davenport, who's going to be your guest tonight. You see, I heard James Gilliland tell someone at his ranch that he believes that Peter Davenport still works for the U.S. government. James Gilliland was saying he's invited Peter Davenport to come out to his ranch and observe UFO Skywatch some night many, many times, but Peter's refused all attempts to get him to come to Gilliland's sanctuary and observe UFOs, which routinely fly over the ranch. We heard from him recently, and so he would like that answered. He's also suspicious that you were a Russian language interpreter for the U.S. government and thinks you still work for the U.S. government and dispense disinformation.
Yeah.
That's Mike in Auburn, Washington. So
there are a lot of targets there I could take pot shots at.
Go right ahead.
Let me start with the government angle. I do not work for the U.S. government. I would not work for the U.S. government. They are the adversaries. I almost said bad guys. I'll refrain from using that term, but they are my adversaries in the field of UFO work.
Mm-hmm.
In years past, in programs past, in incautious moments, I have probably stated or used the term lie, which has a hard edge to it, of course, in referring to the U.S. government's position on UFOs. I think a more accurate representation is that they are simply not addressing the issue. They are simply not sharing with the American people, who pay their bills, of course, and for whom they work as public officials, they're not sharing this information with the American public. I would like to know why. That takes us into a whole nother...
Well, it does. And, Peter, the only explanation I've ever heard is that the U.S. government concluded, along with other governments in the world, that whatever these are, and they don't deny their existence, they simply say they're not a threat to U.S. national security. And I find that worth a chuckle or two, because if things are traversing our airspace and we don't know what they are and we can't stop them and that does not constitute a threat to national security, then what the hell does?
Yeah. And one of the things we haven't touched on tonight with any of our guests is how many airports, how many control zones, how many terminal control areas or Class B airspace.
Yeah.
These objects went through in violation of the Federal Aviation Regulations.
With you all the way, my friend. But
clearly a risk.
Back for a second to Gilliland. I don't want to go away without having you answer that. You know, he makes incredible claims. He's got some incredible photographs and evidence, and I did interview him not long ago, and he apparently has invited you many times, and so why not?
Well, I've been invited down there. There have been many times in the late 90s, I was serving as executor for a late aunt's estate back in New Jersey. You may remember I actually did a program or two from New Jersey. I was very busy back then.
I recall.
And many of my colleagues, many of my friends from Seattle were going down to the ranch. It's just something that I could not fit into my schedule, and I was willing to leave it to other people to go down, look at the evidence, see what people were seeing. I can't rule out that they might have been seeing or might have seen a few UFOs down there. It's quite possible.
The witnesses are impressive.
Everywhere.
Well, maybe what they should do is what everybody else does and call you up. And so there you are. Okay, I wanted to give that answer. A lot of people are asking that question. He's made it very public, apparently, you know, that he's invited you down there. And
right. I think there have been suggestions from that camp that I've worked for the NSA or the CIA or the FBI or the alphabet soup of government agencies. And if that is their belief, I would invite them to come forward with their evidence so it can be analyzed and tested and so on and so forth. It's simply not true. And moreover, I would cite the fact, what purpose would there be for me to work for the U.S. government in, I've put, I think, about 38,000 UFO reports on the National UFO Reporting Center website. So if the government's objective is to cover up the UFO phenomenon, that would be an awfully bizarre act on the part of a somebody in sympathy with that effort.
Well, it would seem so, but, I mean, they use the word disinformation, and
well, that's why I have guests on. I invite them on to speak their own piece. That's very important for me, so people don't think it is just I who is representing these things. They can hear Sue Watson and Stacy Rhodes and Dorothy from Las Vegas, and they know that these people are... They can just hear in their voices that they're sincere.
Why does ufology have such a tendency to self-immolate?
I don't know. It's part of the reason I work alone, Art, because it cuts down on the personnel problems, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Although I find I'm arguing with myself more and more, talking to myself, even though there's just one of me here.
Well, there is, though. There's so much division, there's so much controversy, and just downright meanness sometimes between those who are in a small chuckle field anyway. And so, they're you know, they hurt their own cause. I've wondered about this since the first year I began covering this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. It is troublesome to me, too, and I find I oftentimes just withdraw from it because I am so busy that I do not have the time, and therefore... don't have the desire to get involved in some kind of internecine battle in the ranks of ufology. All I do is provide a conduit for people who believe they may have seen an unusual event, possibly UFO-related, to send that information to a facility where it will be preserved and where it will be made available anonymously in the public forum.
In all these years, Peter, do we know anything more about the motivations of those who show themselves to us?
I don't believe I do. Perhaps there are other UFO investigators out there who do, but it is more a mystery to me what is going on in ufology than it was 12 years ago when I took over the hotline. I have no idea what's going on.
So it's caused more questions than it has provided answers.
That's what I see from my vantage point. The only focus that I've seen occur is in the minds of serious investigators focusing on the U.S. government and its motives in all of this.
Yes.
And I will be honest, it's a very, very difficult thing for me to talk about without a great deal of cautious preparation. But what worries me is the possibility, worries me more than anything else, is the possibility of cooperation in some form that we cannot even imagine between these objects, these presumably alien creatures, and the U.S. government.
Indeed. Hold it right there. There has been a tremendous amount of interest, Peter, in the Todd Sees case, and so if you would please, would you review that case? And I want everybody to listen to this very closely.
Yeah.
This is ominous stuff. It'll curl your hair. So
I don't know that we've ever talked about this one in any depth, Art, but it's the one that really curdles my blood. Mm. I am quick to admit that I don't know what happened there, but... just a thumbnail sketch of what we know is the following.
Please.
On Sunday morning, about 5 a.m., and this was on the 4th of August, 2002, so we're kind of this almost 4 years ago, a gentleman left his home in Northumberland County, Pennsylvania, on a four-wheel vehicle, an ATV, all-terrain vehicle, headed up about 4 or 5 miles to his family land on Mount Montour. He was going up there. Originally, he was going to go with a hunting buddy. They were going to scope out populations of deer up on the mountain in preparation for deer season in Pennsylvania. Well, he did not show up at home when he was scheduled to later that Sunday, and his wife called the authorities, submitted a missing persons report, and before the day was out, some 200 people in a search party were searching for Mr. Sees, and in fact, they very, very quickly found his all-terrain vehicle up very close to the top of Mount Montour. I think it was on his land. On the back of this vehicle, it is reported in the newspapers, they found his outer garments neatly folded, I am led to believe, lying on the back of the all-terrain vehicle.
Yes.
It is reported that one of his boots was found tangled in the top of a tree, perhaps 60 feet off the ground or so.
Really?
All very strange stuff.
I'll say.
Now, what I didn't know any of this. I knew nothing about this case until probably about the 25th of August, roughly 3 weeks later. And somebody sent me an email saying, why aren't you pursuing this case? And I said, what case are you talking about? The person elected to remain anonymous, but I had an email address, and the person shot back saying, well, the case of Todd Sees, of course. You have a report on your website about this incident. And I went to our reports, and lo and behold, there was a report that was so bizarre that I had posted it, but I presumed that it was a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
It was a report to the effect that 4 grown men had seen a disc hovering above Mount Montour and a shaft of light connecting the disc to the top of the mountain and a man's body being floated up into the disc.
Wow.
And I went back and looked at that report and looked at it with from a different perspective now, because Mr. Todd Sees was searched for all that Sunday. They did not find him. In fact, they had horses, they had tracking dogs, and the tracking dogs could, it is reported in the newspaper, I believe, not even the tracking dogs could find a scent of Mr. Sees leading from his all-terrain vehicle.
Perhaps that's because he went vertical.
Exactly. That was very unusual in the minds of the search party members.
Well, the shoe 60 feet in the tree, was Mr. Sees ever found?
Also unusual. He was. His remains were found, quite tragically, and they were found suspended in underbrush, according to the information available to me.
Uh-huh.
He had a very unusual object clamped to his upper arm. I don't know what that object was, but people who saw it said it was very unusual. He was clad only in his undergarments, and it is reported to our center here in Seattle that the remains were so badly mutilated that apparently even perhaps his son could not recognize the remains as having been those of, or being those.
Oh, good Lord. Have you been able to confirm?
Well, I have, Art. I'm anticipating what you're about to say, but all of what I have said has been in the local newspapers back in Northumberland County, Pennsylvania. There were probably approaching a dozen articles about this case in the local newspapers.
Oh, my God, that's human mutilation.
Exactly. Human mutilation. However, I cannot guarantee that there's anything unusual about this. I'm assured by the authorities there locally in Northumberland County that they're in full control of this case. The only problem is that I talked to the medical examiner who allegedly performed the autopsy on Mr. C's body.
Yes.
And he admitted to me that this was a very unusual case. He could not talk about it. When I asked him if an autopsy report would ever be published or released, he said no.
What?
When I asked him if photographs had been taken of the remains during the process of the performing the autopsy, he said yes, but nobody will ever see them.
Wow.
And the other interesting aspect about this, which I'm unable to confirm, is that very shortly after these remains were found and very shortly after the local police had satisfied themselves that they were probably the remains of Mr. Sees, it has been represented to me, and I cannot confirm this, that the FBI was on scene very quickly, that they moved the police cordon off away from the body even further.
Wait a minute. Why was the FBI there?
Well,
that's federal.
The interesting question.
Yes.
It's a local homicide or
yes, problem.
Accidental death of some variety.
Yeah.
Don't know that foul play was involved, but the mutilation suggests almost certainly there was. And it would not have fallen under federal jurisdiction. There was no kidnapping across a state line, etc. Now, it gets even more interesting, Art. It is asserted that the some 200 members of that search party, who had just scoured the mountaintop. By the way, the body was found very close to Mr. C's house, only about 100 or 200 meters from the house he had left at 5 o'clock that Sunday morning.
Oh.
Well, the interesting thing is, it is asserted by people with whom I've corresponded, who allege to have been members of that search party, that all of the members of the search party were ordered to go to a local fire station where they were told that under no circumstance would they talk about this case or that search.
Huh.
And they were taken up there allegedly to have their health checked, quote.
Their health. Was there any reason given to not be talking about this?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Oh, is this weird or what?
It is a very, very strange story. We have, I placed a 2 or 3 page summary of just the facts on our website a number of years ago. It's generated a great deal of interest, a great deal of controversy.
I see why.
And I have no idea what happened to Mr. Sees. It's just that it is all very, very strange. And I've read in Seattle papers over the last 2 or 3 years of similar cases in Philadelphia. There have been mutilation cases in Philadelphia. Whether they're human-related or something else, I have no way of knowing. I haven't had...
Well, what hit me were three things. The mutilation, of course, but the shoe 60 feet up in a tree, and then his body suspended over brush. I mean, come on, folks.
Yeah.
And then the dogs, four really, the dogs not being able to track from the vehicle. So he was taken vertically, a shoe got caught in a tree, and then he was obviously deposited or dropped from something. So, I mean, that adds up, Peter.
It adds up pretty well. It's just that I cannot confirm all of these facts. And the reason they can't be confirmed is that the autopsy report was sealed. None of the family members of Mr. Sees, of the decedent, were summoned to positively identify the remains.
Hmm.
In fact, the remains allegedly were returned to the family in, I'm told, a sealed coffin. They were forbidden from opening the coffin. No,
good
open
Lord.
Casket.
This is just too much. There's got to be a way to follow up on all of this with family members, with, I mean, you don't get that from a medical examiner, sorry. I mean, by whose order is it not going to be made public?
Exactly. And my suspicion is there have been things done behind the scenes, probably not in conformity with the law.
The feds.
To cover up this case. And people criticize me for not knowing all of the details. I would point out that it's very difficult to know all the details of a case like this when the officials, the authorities, are covering them up.
Well, is it not possible, for example, to follow up on what authority would the autopsy not be released?
Absolutely, it would be possible.
Okay.
If I were not receiving 50 reports a day, I would have been on this. And if it were not on the other side of the country, it was turned over to MUFON, and they had a new state director in Pennsylvania, an attorney, interestingly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the details of to what degree he followed this one up, but to the best of my knowledge, no report was ever generated on this one. That is unfortunate because the details we have, the facts we have, on the face of them are alarming.
Yes.
If any of this is true, it is a very unusual case, and I cannot conclude, I can't share with our audience that I know what the cause of Mr. C's death was, but on the face of it, it all looks very strange.
It sure does. All right, I want to touch on this. It's a personal thing for you, but I think it is so cool and so unusual and so wild.
Yeah.
Peter is making a bit of a change in his personal life. Tell him what you're doing, Peter.
Well, over the next several months, I presume, I will be moving the National UFO Reporting Center from Seattle out to eastern Washington to a piece of land that I think I'm safe in saying this. All the documents, all the required items have gone into escrow.
Uh-huh.
To the best of my knowledge, I've been successful in purchasing a decommissioned U.S. Air Force ICBM Atlas E missile site on about 21 to 22 acres.
Oh, my God.
Out in the middle of a wheat field.
And this missile silo is how far below ground?
Well, it's not that far below, and actually it does not have a silo. What makes this facility so attractive from the standpoint of rebuilding it, refurbishing it, and living in it or near it,
yes,
all of the rooms are quadrilateral, like tennis courts, but big and solid.
You're talking about how many square feet underground?
About 18,000 square feet.
18,000?
Big one.
Do you mean 18,000 or 1,800?
18,000.
Oh, my God.
It is big, and it will give me room to have my own ice skating rink and to once, for the first time in a long time, get all of my UFO stuff separated from all of my personal stuff, get all of my books on one bookshelf,
yes,
or at least against one wall.
Yes.
And perhaps I will do a future program on Coast from the missile room.
How cool would that be?
But
you actually have a missile room, like a control room? Do you?
Do I have a what?
Do you have an actual control room?
There is a control room there, but of course all of the equipment has been taken out of it.
Oh, gee, you can't launch, huh?
So I'll just have to put my own in. So the UFO Reporting Center will run out of perhaps the control room
that
or the missile
so cool
room or something.
That is so cool. I imagine this big open, super strong area with like pipes and a submarine running through it and wiring and all that kind of stuff. Is that still there?
You got it.
Uh-huh. How
so
cool.
It is. Basements have always been my favorite room in any house I've ever lived in. They're cooler. I like the smell of concrete. And this is one of the wildest things I've ever done in my life, but it's
I'm
a project
sure
art that I've been working on actively for 4 years, and it finally came to fruition after a great deal of frustration.
So your secret dream then was to own a missile silo.
Yeah, that's what I got, and I'm going to move out there. It's got its own water supply, two wells,
yes,
pump up to 500,000 gallons a day.
Uh-huh.
I hope to have my own power system. Frankly, it is a vote on my part, a vote of the level of confidence I have in our public officials to keep this country on track.
Well, let me tell you, brother, when you own a missile silo, your neighbors don't screw with you.
Yeah. Now I'm keeping my eye open at Boeing Surplus here in Kent for a used missile, just as a political statement. And
well, I was considering for a while purchasing, you can buy these big rockets.
Yeah.
Now, you can't buy some aspects of them without a license, but you can buy these big rockets, and I was going to put one on my front lawn.
There you go.
Just sort of a statement, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps something like that would be in order. What will we see topside, like a concrete bunker?
Well, there's not much you can see topside. The most visible part of it is the blast door, which is a vertical door that slid aside. My understanding is it weighs about 70,000 pounds. My back door, my screen door, is about 70,000.
So when somebody, well, I guess they can't knock, right? So if they push the button and it goes wow, wow downstairs, you hit what? Hit a button and this steel door slowly starts opening?
Something like that.
A glass door?
Absolutely.
Oh, that is so cool.
It is quite something. Dirty, filthy. It's the ugliest place you'll ever see in your life. It's going to take me months to get the place cleaned up, to start getting toilets installed.
Well, they must have toilets.
They used to, but all of the interior materials were taken out when these places were decommissioned in 1964.
I see.
So all of that has to be re-engineered, reinstalled, and so on.
Now, you told me earlier this was during the days when we operated on a 30-minute, in other words, if they were to launch over there, we'd have 30 minutes to get ours in the air before we became obliterated, basically, right?
Yep, exactly.
And so when the era of submarines came along, this particular silo became a moot point?
Obsolete. I suspect that the taxpayers paid hundreds of millions of dollars just for a few months or a few years of coverage based on the rumor of a missile gap, so-called missile gap, Soviets and the Americans.
That is wild, Peter. All right, we've only got enough time for you to repeat the address, which I'd like you to do, for donations, because this is for the UFO Reporting Center, folks. It's the only one we've got like it.
I'll give the address and I'll give our phone number. The address is the National UFO Reporting Center. Next line is P.O. Box 45623. That's P.O. Box 45623. Third line is University Station, Seattle, Washington, and our zip code is 98145. Box 45623, University Station, Seattle, 98145. Our hotline number is area code 206-722-3000 for current or recent sightings only. If people would please, I'm being inundated with calls, and of course I'm going to turn the phone off tonight, so people can call me sometime tomorrow if they wish, or later on Sunday, I should say.
All right, well, give the number again.
The telephone number, the National UFO Reporting Center hotline number, is area code 206-722-3000, 206-722-3000, and our website, where we have an online report form, is ufocenter.com, and I'd like to close with an appeal.
Very quickly.
Anybody who is in Arizona on the 13th of March, 1997, if they saw those things, please submit a report.
All right, buddy. We're out of time. Thank you so very much, and good night.